So I'm Emily. I'm with Salem Sound Coast Watch. For those of you that don't know me, this is Jack. He's also with Salem Sound Coast Watch. So we'd like to talk to you about Salem and Salem Sound. That's where you're all living, and that's probably what you care about here with the marine debris. So I want to start by taking us back to 2011. Does anyone remember the incident in Hooksett, New Hampshire, and what happened there? So the wastewater, Rebecca knows it well, the wastewater treatment facility had a spill of these discs. Have you all seen these discs on the beach before? What?
Still picking them up.
Yeah, so we understand this. We understand this idea of garbage and trash transporting throughout our environment. Way up here, starting in Hooksett, traveling down the Merrimack River, coming out the New Hampshire seacoast, around Cape Ann, and we're finding them. Still finding them on our beaches. So we know this problem well. We understand it. I think some of you have probably participated in a beach cleanup with us. Yes? Raise your hand if you've participated. All right. Way to go. and so we have a great Adopt-a-Beach program that's been going on for 25 years, and we've been participating in Coast Sweep that Keith mentioned, and we would love more of you to get out there with us, like Keith was talking about. What can you do? So there's some information out on the table about some Adopt-a-Beach trainings and ways to get involved, because we know this problem isn't going away anytime soon. And one last thing in the news recently, you might have seen a dock that washed ashore in Nahant. Did anyone see that on the news? Yes. It's on our Facebook. There's a picture. You should check it out if you haven't seen it. And it's pretty powerful. A large pier of some sort that had styrofoam flotation in it has broken apart on the beach. And so we know what styrofoam does when it breaks up into little bits and gets to what Keith was talking about with the microplastics. So we see the problem.
I'm gonna hand this
off to Jack here, and he's gonna lead us into the presentation. Bear with me while I de-mic.
Too much technology. Too many people wanna hear us tonight.
And we'll have one more juggling act in the middle, but it will be good.
Thanks, Emily. So, good evening, everyone. I'm Jack. So I'm just going to jump right into Salem Sound Coast Watch's three-pronged approach to marine debris in Salem Sound. So we start with removal projects. For nearly 25 years, we've been doing cleanup and removal projects all throughout Salem Sound. Saw a lot of you raise your hands, so you guys know you guys have been there and you've been to the beaches and seen garbage there and helped us remove it. So we've really started recording a lot of our data since 2014. And here are some totals. Since 2014, we've removed a little bit over 30,000 individual items, totaling close to 1,600 actual pounds of debris. And we've interacted with 152 different volunteers and held 125 events. So not bad for only 2 years of hard work. And we've been involved in the international cleanup event called Coast Sweep. It's a coordinated cleanup in which debris is not only removed from coastal areas, but the actual items are recorded to contribute to a larger international database. So we can take a look at some of that data right now. This first pie chart is all of our totals for 2015. And the blue area, the large blue area you see, represents all the cigarette butts that we found in the past 2 years, and it represents 47% of all the items we found. The larger orange portion is 35%, and that represents food items, cups, plates, plastic utensils, food wrappers, straws, things of that nature. We also have plastic bottles, both paper and plastic bags, and fishing items representing 4% each. And 6% household items, so appliances, clothing, larger plastic items that you would find in the house typically. This next slide represents all the micro debris that we found. So these are items that are an inch or less and represent a real serious issue with small organisms in the ocean, especially in our area. So plastic pieces are our dominant find with over 3,000. Foam pieces to the right, with just with over 2,000, and then glass pieces with close to 2,000. So in addition to our efforts in removing debris from our coastal areas, we also try to tackle debris before it hits the streets, before it goes in the storm drains, before it's littered and dumped into the ocean, through several preventative projects. The first of which is involved with the city of Salem and their cigarette recycling program. In the city, some of you may have seen it. Has anyone seen these bins around Salem? Yeah, that's great. So there's 80 of these bins around the downtown area, and their use is to collect cigarette butts. And once they're full, they're emptied and mailed to a company called TerraCycle based in New Jersey. And there they recycle them into industrial grade plastics, plastic decking, garbage barrels, shovels, things like that. And you can see a nice DPW worker emptying one there, and one of the bins in the lower right hand corner. So it's great. It's a great project, and it's just about a year old. We had several teens working with us last year, and they hopped aboard this project, and they kind of helped rebrand the project. As you can see to the right, there's the mayor of Salem with Barbara, and the bins look a little bit different. There's a yellow decal, and they helped design that and implement that, and Emily will touch on that in a little bit. It was some really great work from two of our high school students. And secondly, we do a lot of work with storm drains, educating people about storm drains, what they are, their connection to the ocean, and their effect, their ability to transport pollutants and trash to the ocean. So as you can see in the top, a lot of water goes down storm drains, right? So that must mean a lot of pollutants also follow with that water, including plastic trash. So we usually go out with students, and we take these stencils you can see right here, and we use some spray paint, and we leave a simple message right on the pavement that any passerby may notice, and kind of educate them on the connection to their local waterway. There's a lot of efforts across the country that are trying to increase the use of these stencils and messages, and actually one of our current high school students will touch on that a bit later. So that's it. I'm going to hand it off to Emily again.
With us, Matt. So our education and outreach, we're lucky enough to have a marine debris grant, as Keith mentioned, from NOAA, which has allowed us to do some amazing work with outreach and education. Is that better? And that kind of brings our two prongs of the prevention and removal together. So things that we've done with that program. We have a Talking Trash for Clean Oceans education program that we take into the schools. So it's designed for fourth, sixth, and even seventh grade students, where they go around to six different interactive learning stations, and they learn about a different part of marine debris. They learn about what plastics are. They learn about what happens when plastics are in the water column and all those animals that feed on those plastics in the water column. They learn about how trash travels. I wanted to go forward once. There we go, thank you. And so they look at the map and they see what their watershed is, and they look at the streams and the waterways that lead into Salem Sound and what that implies for how trash is traveling through there. They sort a rack line. We bring in an actual rack sample, and they sort through it and look for plastics. So next time you're at the beach, kick around the rack line, and you'll see an amazing amount of plastic and trash caught up in that. So that's what we try to convey to them, that it's all the little stuff too that's a problem. So they love it. And we wrap it up with an actual cleanup. So this is Bates' fourth grade. We went and did a cleanup at Forest River Park, and they had an amazing time, and it was such a powerful experience going from learning about what the problem is to actually being able to do something about it. Because we know how frustrating that is when you just get mired in the depression of how awful this is, and then, oh, let's not do anything about it. So it's a very powerful program, and it's a model that we'll continue to use as we move forward in our efforts. And the other piece of this grant program in education and outreach that we're doing, we're very proud of this one. This is working with teenagers. It's an internship for them. And they are charged with taking on a project that combats street trash in the Salem area. So for some reason, my picture's not here, but one part of it was education and outreach. And some of the teens went into the schools and did programs with us, with the younger students, the program that I showed you before. And they learned even more deeply by teaching it to younger students. They removed trash. You can see this image here. This is actually us doing a cleanup on Misery Island last summer. We went to the backside of the island. It might be a beach if you've been out there that you didn't really go to. It's a little bit hard to get to. It's very rocky. And we went back there, and we found all of these lobster pots that had washed up. Some of them were strung together. We had to cut them apart. And they were troopers. They carried them all the way from one beach to the other. And we coordinated the pickup of those and the disposal. So that was very powerful. And if you've ever been down Peabody Street in Salem, you know how trashed that is. So that's an area we concentrate on. And we do cleanups with our teens there. And it's very rewarding for them. So what we ask the teens to do is to actually complete a project and do something. So Jack mentioned the butt bins. So that was something where we went around, we walked around with them for several days, and they interviewed people. They interviewed people to find out if they knew that the butt bins existed. And many people told them that no, they didn't know they were there. So they came up with the idea that, okay, we need to make these more eye-catching. And they invigorated the project, the Salem City project, and they helped, like Jack said, design that sticker. And now we see the butt bins being used a lot more. They're full more often. So that was successful. Another group wanted to beautify Salem Willows and bring attention to the trash barrels there. So they worked on actually painting messages onto the trash barrels, and they did an art contest. And that was very successful. And there were other projects, and I am going to invite our current teens at this time to come tell you about what they are planning. They have been working for about four weeks doing research and learning around marine debris and thinking up projects, and they're starting to formulate their ideas and come up with a plan. So they have a short little, we call it an elevator speech, to give you about what their projects are. So, can we just use the?
Yeah, that's what I'm just saying. Okay. They stand next to you.
Oh.
Hello, my name is Alan, and I'm here to talk about drains and litter. Did you know that storm drains empty directly into the ocean? That's correct. Around the Salem watershed, trash and debris litter our streets, enter our drains, and people don't seem to really notice. That litter will go straight to the ocean and harm the wildlife in the region. Well, how can we raise awareness of the issue? Some towns in and around Arkansas and cities like Baltimore have invested in projects that involve painting the drains around the city, preferably in public areas, with beautiful murals to catch the eyes of the public. By doing so, they were able to raise awareness of trash harming the oceans and creeks through art. And I truly believe that through eye-catching drain murals, we will be able to lower the impact on our watersheds and really raise awareness about people and littering.
Did you know sea turtles eat jellyfish? Did you know that plastic bags look like jellyfish? Well, most plastic bags get eaten by these sea turtles. So we decided to make reusable bags that we're giving out for free. We're making these to reduce the amount of plastic waste being swept into the ocean.
John worked with us last summer, and he made, or last semester, last spring, and he made a piece of artwork out of trash found on the streets. So he's back with us again this year for great work.
So good evening. My name is John, as Emily said. And I'm pretty straightforward with you guys tonight. Just came here to point one thing out. What if people aren't well educated about marine debris, like how our friend Keith over here told us today? What if they don't really know how all plastic products that we dispose of go? Well, I have a solution for that, and I'm going to be working on an educational video where can basically explain on a much better detail about marine debris and can also give tips about how to minimize this issue.
Hi, my name is Lisa, and this is
Tori. Hi, I'm Tori.
Do you know that each year about 500 billion to 1 trillion plastic bags are used every year? Well, that's about 1 million plastic bags that are being used per minute. And these plastic bags end up in the ocean.
Our project's goal, our project's name is called The Little Things, is to highlight the smaller actions people can take to make positive change in their environment. We will do this by making plastic bag recycling centers within grocery and convenience stores more prominent and convenient. We are also reaching out to transportation agencies to advertise about the negative impacts of marine debris.
So growing up, I never really thought about the impact that trash has had on our environment and more specifically our oceans. However, the problem is clearly very evident. So my partner Bastian and I have decided to implement a monofilament recycling program in Salem Harbors.
Thank you. Oh, so you can see we have a great group we're working with. So this is definitely one of my favorite programs. So look out for great stuff that they're going to do and sign up for Adopt a Beach training.
So we'll take questions now, so don't go away, stay okay. Here. I did want to just say that we do Adopted Beach trainings various times during the year, and so we have two coming up. They're in the evenings. They're going to be in our new space. I have to introduce this to you. We are moving from a second floor office where we've been for 20 years, and it looks like it, the four of us, and now we're moving to a space that's three times larger. We'll have our own classroom and a conference room, and it's at 10 Federal Street in Salem, so we're very excited about on the first floor with our own door. So the trainings will be able to be there, and so we don't have to try scheduling and all that. So we'll have more events than we've had in the past. So make sure if they're on our calendar, if you're interested in the Adopt a Beach training, if you can't make those, you want to do the training. It's a Beach 101. It's a lot more than marine debris. Yeah, you're the eyes and ears and the hands of our keeping our beaches healthy. Let me know, and we'll schedule a different time. We also are doing cleanups, and those are scheduled out there. They're on our calendar. April 30th, we're starting a spring coast sweep because that's when our beaches are really filthy. And then we'll do Salem, and then in Marblehead on May 14th, it's a Saturday morning, we're going to be with the Marblehead Yacht Club at Riverhead. And we did this last year. It was so effective. We're going to do it again, and everyone is welcome. That's on the website. So let's take some questions now. But Keith, you want to come back up? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, so the question is about legislation and whether we're working on that. The Marine Debris Program is non-regulatory. So everything we do is just trying to convince people to stop doing something or to pitch in. So we're also, as a government agency, we can't advocate for legislation. So if your local municipality wants to put in a bag ban or something like that, that'd be great, but we can't advocate for that. The one thing that has passed recently is a microbead ban. So the small pieces of plastic that were found in a lot of soaps and face scrubs, toothpaste as well, Congress actually passed a ban on those. So that'll be in effect, I think, 2018. So until then, you should still look at your products to see if in the inactive ingredients there are, I think it says either polypropylene or polyethylene, which are two types of plastic. If that's in the inactive ingredients list, there is plastic that's going down the drain from your cosmetic products.
They don't have to list them if they're inactive ingredients, right?
Yeah, they're typically listed on toothpaste or soap. Yes. So we definitely work with state fisheries agencies to try to figure out ways to better address derelict fishing gear. These laws are strong on purpose, and they're often difficult to get around. But any removal projects that we fund, they have to get permission from the state so they can actually go out and remove those things. And there's actually a study happening right now looking at different regulations around the country to see if there's a better model that states could implement that would aid in actually getting rid of those ones that are clearly derelict. Even like if you're on a beach and you see a piece, you're not supposed to touch it. So we're trying to figure out if there's a better way. It's in the works, but it probably will take some time.
Often, yeah. We all agree with you, and it's, you know, okay, so what can we do? A couple of years ago, we did some social marketing, and we did a focus group, and I was really annoyed at the end because the focus group said, you just got to talk to this, forget about adults, just go to the children. And I was like, no. But we have expanded our education school program, and I think you can't ever give up on anybody, but I think going to the fourth grade, the fifth grade, the eighth grade, you know, helping them realize how, and then them going home and talking to their parents, it is one way, and I think we are really focusing on that, as well as our Adopt a Beach, you know, our beachkeepers. I've trained over 450 people have come to our trainings, and that was started in 2010. So, but yeah, it's a tremendous amount of work.
Your programs are fantastic, and I've been involved, and you've done incredible work. But you can only reach so many people. I think it's a general apathy of all of us, although I'm sitting next to someone who goes around town cleaning up this town like no one.
Oh, yeah, she's one of our great beachkeepers.
and I think we all need to challenge ourselves and our friends.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Well, we will have open houses. We'll have our Adopt a Beach meetings, and anybody is always welcome to come and help us brainstorm on other ways and who else to expand. You know, this important.
Yep.
In
back.
I
think
it's great. Well, does it produce? Otherwise, you cannot win this fight.
Yes, definitely, and there. There are efforts being made to talk with companies and try to get them to change what they're using. Biodegradable plastic is a tough one because once it's out in the ocean, it doesn't tend to biodegrade as well as it might in a laboratory setting. So if it gets put in the correct environment, it will, but I don't think it's necessarily a solution at this point in time based on the formulas that they've come up with. But do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah. So actually, Keith hosted a really great workshop that we attended, and there was a lot of important stakeholders there. There were Kara Lavender Law was there that Keith spoke of, and she was amazing to hear about the data and the research that's happening. But also, we heard about other ideas and other things that are going on. So these are actually buoys that are made. Buoys that are made from mushroom mycelium, and this one is coated with a plastic because if it goes in water, or not a plastic, but a different substance. But so there are products out here like this, and so I think that we need to get those to the people. So I don't know how we do that, but there are a lot of great things going on like that.
Yes, so working with industry is really important to us. And like I said, our office is non-regulatory. So the fishing industry is regulated by another part of NOAA. And I always have to make sure that they know that I'm not coming in to regulate. I'm coming in to work with and partner. And really, if we can help their bottom line, that's really what I want to be able to do, right? So if I can prevent their traps from being lost, that's saving them $50 to $100 to $150 per trap rather than having to buy a new one every year. So we could figure out a system for that. It's really helpful. And also we work with organizations that have really good relationships with industry. So it doesn't have to be NOAA partnering with industry. It's an organization they already know, like the Massachusetts Lobstermen's Association or the Gulf of Maine Lobster Foundation. So that's helpful, but I do think that there's a need for better studies and better science, because if you're not working with the industry to develop those new things, if you're going to develop some sort of new technology or a new escape panel that goes onto the trap, if they don't get to see that in action and see how it's developed, they don't want to support it. So that's something that we're really going to try to work on in the next few years, is if we're going to develop any kind of new tech, we need to make sure that we have buy-in from the industry.
In the back?
Yeah, I want to be very much smaller than that. There's no plastic bag.
Sure, so the question was about, is there a way to filter out the small pieces of plastic, microplastic? Is there a plastic magnet? There is currently not a plastic magnet. It's really difficult to filter out. You can get it out with fine mesh nets, but then you're also capturing living things, right? So the small plankton that's in the water, you're going to get that as well. There is an organization that's working on developing technology. They want to go to the middle of the Pacific and try to filter the ocean. And it's led by a 21-year-old European guy. It's called the Clean Ocean Project, I believe. And they want to develop a trial system that they'll do off the coast of Japan in the next few years. We're hopeful that it'll work, but we don't know. So we're not funding something like that, but we're eagerly awaiting their results.
Yeah, and there's also, there's a work in the field as well, bacteria that choose their female. It's all plastic and nylon, everything, right? Where does it go? Right?
Yeah, plastic never goes away, really. It just gets smaller and smaller. And I do agree. So my background is in science. I'm I have a doctorate in environmental science, and I strongly advocate for research funding, but I don't get to make the funding decisions for our program. But I do think that working with industry and funding research is really important.
Maybe one more question, and then people can stay and ask questions.
So the question was about kind of tracing plastic from maybe the interior of the country and making its way out to the coast. It's really tough because even like the Japan tsunami stuff, I'm like, well, that's definitely from Japan, but how do you know it actually left with the tsunami debris? It could have come off a boat or at a different time. And especially in America, products that we use here on the coast may be the same as products that are used in the interior of the country. So it's really tough to know. But the Hooksit event, it's one thing that was released all at the same time. So when you find it, you kind of know where it came from, right? Wasn't it like they were the only facility using that type of thing? Yeah. So that's like it's hard to have a tracer, but that's a really good one.